I'd known y'all wasn't going to have a crowd. I could have brought some folks with me. Before I start the healing and dipping services for the evening, I want to thank the committee that invited me. It's a pleasure to be here. I've had a most enjoyable time. Played golf today. Had a young fella in the group, I think, with about 11 months sobriety. And I prayed all the way around the golf course hoping he didn't have as much hell with them 12 steps as he is having with them 18 holes. Now, this thing I'm standing on up here is kind of narrow, and I get to dancing around near the end of the service. I usually hum or sing a few bars, and if I disappear, I'll be right back. I enjoyed so much what the fella from up in that swamp that he couldn't pronounce too good, and I can't at all, had to say last night. And I understand some of the confusion he was talking about. I still experience it, you know. I'm recovering, as our chairman said, whatever the hell that is. But, you know, some things I never understood and never will. When I was a kid, everybody did all the cooking in the house, and we went outdoors to use the bathroom. And now everybody goes to the bathroom in the house and goes outdoors to cook. My name is Harold, and I'm an alcoholic. And because of God's grace through this program, and by practicing the principles outlined in our 12 steps, I've had nothing to drink containing alcohol, any of them funny cigarettes or pocket rockets or... since April 27th of 1960. And for that, I'm extremely grateful. Now, I'm an alcoholic. I don't think I was born an alcoholic. I know they're doing a great deal of research in the world of science today about where we come from and how come it. But I ain't never yet. There's a few coming in, but they ain't coming to my place. I've never met an alcoholic yet that didn't drink a little whiskey. Now, I know we got some, and they're welcome. I'm glad to hear it keeps us from getting lonesome. That, you know, their story discloses in a general way what they sniff, stuff, smoked, shot, and so on. And that's fine. We're glad you're here. Glad to have you. But I drink whiskey. And I think it has a great deal to do with the fact that today I'm an alcoholic and have been and am enjoying reasonably poor health And when I feel bad about my recovery, it's always a privilege because I am forever getting to hear someone like the voice of our conference cheer me up and remind me that she too can get well. I was born a twin. I have a twin brother down in East Texas, kind of like this part of Georgia. It was a Bible Belt, right in the heart of the Baptist country. In fact, by the time I was 5 years old, Grandma had convinced us that John the Baptist come out of the big thicket, which is about 7 or 8 miles below the house. But I don't think when I was born in that farmhouse down there in a feather bed that old country doctor brought me and my brother into the bedroom and laid one on one side of Mama and one on the other side and said, "Ms. Wilson, that rooting around there on the left is your brand new alcoholic." Incidentally, I haven't drank in a long time, but I'm still afflicted with that rooting around. My story, most of you have heard it, and a hell of a lot of you don't want to hear it again, but it's the only one I got. I ain't particularly proud of it, but I did not drink at an early age. I attended school. I was an athlete. I went on to college, finished college, and World War II, not the Spanish-American, but World War II came along, and we were forced to register somewhere prior to my junior year in college, I think 39 or 40, and we were allowed to finish school, and I went home to work and incidentally married, and then some 9 or 10 months later I was gone into the Marine Corps, and I was gone for over 4 years, 35 or 6 of those months spent overseas, and drinking was not a part of my life. Staying alive was a big part of my life. Being scared and hiding, and hell, I got where I could dig a hole 9 foot deep with a spoon at about... And these ads the airlines put out about touring the islands have never appealed to me. But anyway, I came back home to East Texas and was moved out to where I've lived since 1947 into the western part of the state, and my drinking started. In a very small way, socially, you know, somebody'd say, "I believe I'll have a drink," and I'd say, "So shall I." And that's the way it went. And I drank and I worked and I drank and I worked, and the working got to interfering with the drinking, and I gave up the working and went on with the drinking. Some children were born to this marriage, 2 boys at that time and a girl, and my profession has always been sort of unemployed. But we had big names for it. Early days, it was an independent oil operator. Marge teases me now, I'm a petroleum consultant. That means the same thing, that you don't have no job. I've been extremely successful at not working. I have not accomplished a great deal. Most alcoholics don't. Now, you notice after a few years in this program, they do. Not many of us, you know. I would have loved to have said I was a has-been of some sort or other. But, you know, hell, I was just a never was. I hear people today, you know, they have been this and have been that, and I get a little jealous about it from time to time. Made up a few lies, but they started this taping. I know. That kind of blew it. But anyway, the drinking progressed. And I knew nothing in the world about the disease. I had stood drunk at my father's bed and watched him die. My father was an alcoholic, a brilliant man, an exciting man, young. He went 20 years and some odd months. He never heard of this program, never had the privilege, the blessed privilege of being a member of this fellowship. He stayed sober 20 years and some few months, and for some reason, we never knew, he got drunk on Wednesday, and we buried him on Sunday. And I was drunk. And that gave, as any good alcoholic can understand, that gave me a perfect excuse. This was what's going to happen to me. Of course, Dad was 58 and I was 35, and I didn't look at the long career ahead of me before I'd end up as he did, but I was firmly convinced, and so my drinking continued. And it got worse, and it got hopeless, and it reached a point that I simply could not do anything about it, and yet I made as many attempts as I knew to do something about it. I got very active in my church. A little later, overactive, but very active in the beginning. And I got, I attended church regular when I was able. And I never made one of them early services. But I went and I'd sing and throw up and get saved, and I never did know from what, but that's what they said we were doing. I was just getting wet as hell, and but I was trying, and I'd go and talk to the doctors, and they'd talk to me, and I'd go talk to them funny people and shrinks. And they'd talk to me about my emotions. They'd talk to me about if I sucked my thumb. And I knew right off something wrong with me, because, hell, I couldn't remember where I sucked my thumb or not. And if I hated my mother, I hated my dad. I never did figure out what that had to do with the love and the craving I had for bourbon whiskey. I ain't figured out today. So I went on drinking, and my church work got bad. I served on a lot of committees. I was on, you know, a drunk. Hell, he don't want to be one of the flock. He's the head ram. And I got on the board of the church there some way. I swear I don't know how. And in our church, we had communion every Sunday. Every Sunday. God, I never got so tired of having communion in my life. But, and it's hell on you when you're about half drunk. And it's always my job to hold that silver-looking thing with all them little grape juice bottles in it. And you'd stand up there, and one of them old boys that wanted to go to heaven that morning. Would get started to praying, and my God, he'd pray for, and you're sitting there. And by the time we got to Ubangis and the lower Slobovians blessed, man, the sweat was pouring off of him, and we'd go down the aisle, and we'd pass the deal. We had a bunch of old, there's a ranching church there, and we had a bunch of them old unctuous sisters that sniffed, you know. <They'd>, and you'd have to kind of lean over to pass your little bucket along there, you know. And about second or third pew down, I'd begin to have one of them sinking spells. And boy, I'm going to tell you, if they didn't hit that grapefruit or juice a quick lick, it was gone. I'd snatch her right back. But I had a little drink out in the coat closet. And finally they had a meeting there and decided that maybe I oughtn't to be one of the elders anymore. And that is fine. I didn't want to be anything anymore. I carried an old map around with me, like all oil men. They've got a map. Like today, everybody has got a briefcase. My wife come in the house the other day, carried a damn briefcase. Everybody's got a briefcase. My shine boy sets his down before he starts, you know. Everybody's got one. And I had a map, had an old 1941 or two map I carried around. I was making deals all the time in the bar. Sitting on the stool, drilling them wells, selling that oil, and drinking that whiskey. Fun. I got where I was kind of like a mule, you know. I could sleep standing, just go to the bathroom walking. Wasn't no big deal, just wherever you was. I think one of the greatest resentments I ever had in my life is when they replaced them buttons on your pants with a zipper. Mine's always rusty. And I hear people in a group today talking about, you know, had a bad day. I tell you, a bad day. And when you stand there impressing somebody with your great brilliance and intelligence, and that first little twinge that first little call of nature. And you know that already the zipper stuck. So I just walk around the building and stand there humming and looking around. It ain't so bad in West Texas in summer. It gets about 105 and the wind blows. And you heal up pretty quick, but in the wintertime it's bad. I had a cold all the time. Finally, some people who knew me well in this little town that I lived in, because I had been active in our city and our civic deals until, you know, people finally run out of a place to put a drunk. You know, for years you can keep them moving, and that was a treatment for us. You know, keep him moving. You run out of kinfolks for him to send you to. You run out of trips to take. You can't go nowhere a foot and broke except around the block, and I'd worn that out. Now, we had a group in our town I didn't know until later, but most of the members in it were people I had known. A fellow who'd lived across the street from me, who most of you know in Alcoholics Anonymous. And his wife, who is quite active and has been active for many years in Al-Anon. They had watched me very, very closely, as close as they dare get, because I began to spend a lot of time in the city jail. And then I graduated to the county jail. And I was back and forth depending on who saw me first that morning. I used to think the sheriff's office and the city jail was kind of like Sunday school used to be. If they got old Harold 410, one of them got a little gold star. And that's sort of the way it went. And it was getting tiresome. They talked about how tiresome it was. They never were interested in my response about how tiresome it was for me. And we'd argue and fight, and they'd beat, and like all drunks, you know. You'd end up in a heap on the floor. Couldn't hardly wait to get up, get you another drink, and try them again. And this went on and on. And I don't remember a lot of hatred. Honestly, I don't. I don't remember a lot of the things I hear talked about today dealing with drinking. I don't remember a lot of despair and anger. I was ashamed, deeply ashamed of what I had become. I didn't have a lot of resentments. I was what I was. And God Himself seemed to have abandoned my pleas to do something about it. I could not do anything about it. I didn't know what to do about it. And this Al-Anon, through some hooks and crooks, got me into an AA meeting. Now, I've been accused over the years of being hard on the Al-Anons. And I'm not. I just never want you to forget that you sit here tonight getting well, because most of us damn near died. And I know this is a family illness. You know, I know it is. I never have understood it because, you know, when the cops come after me and hit me over the head, they didn't say, "You sit right there till I go get the rest of your family." Or if I was in somebody's car somewhere, they didn't snatch me out and put them cuffs on me and say, we're going to run by the house and get the rest of them sick folks. But I went to this meeting, and the most joyous thing on earth happened to me. And I am so fortunate, more fortunate than most of you will ever be. I walked into a room where there were five people that I had known for years and years and years as the worst drunks in our little town. I thought two of them was dead. I'd assured I'd already been to their funeral. I thought I'd been to their funeral. But there they stood. Clean, decent, laughing. And they said, come on in. We've been waiting on you. You see, I knew right off. I didn't know what was going on in that room. But brilliant, like all Alkies, you know. Not many people lace on their back and puke straight up. It's pretty brilliant, you know. We're brilliant people. And quick as a flash, I caught on to the fact that whatever was going on in that room had cleaned up, straightened out, and given life and purpose to my friends. You may not get to see that. You may get friends after you get to AA. But I'm convinced, because of the unmerited love of God, had it not been that way, I would not be here. Because I saw, they didn't have to say anything, I saw something that I could not believe. And I wasn't interested in come to Jesus. I wasn't interested in praying to God. I wasn't interested in changing my morality. What I had in mind, as quick as I could get one of them by the arm, was to say, tell me. Hey, tell me how you went all day today without a drink of booze. God bless our book. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and power. Now it said, our emotions will get us drunk. If I could have bought a bottle of emotions, I'd have had one, but I drank Jack Daniels. My interpersonal relationship may get me drunk. Hell, ain't a drunk worth his salt even knows what the hell you're talking about. Granted, I needed some behavior modification. And the local authorities were assisting in every way possible. I get so god-awful tired reading about the grants they're giving these dinghies to study us. I want them to give us a grant to study them. I would like to tell you that from the first moment I walked into that room that I've never had another drink since. And if I thought I could get by with it, I would. But I began to yo-yo. As we say out in the cow country, I'd stay long enough to get it all knowed up, and then back out I'd go. And in I'd come, and out I'd go. And nobody changed the rules of Alcoholics Anonymous for me. Nobody got out of AA so I could get in. They said, here are the steps. Here's the book. Here's the night we meet. Love to have you, but won't miss you. Doing fine before you come by. We'll try to stay open till you get back. God, nowadays it seems like we're trying to build a congregation. Running, chasing drunks that don't want to be chased, don't want to come, ain't interested in coming. And you're out there carrying a message. Put it down. Go set in the meeting. Your program is entirely based on the fact that there is no human power can relieve your or his alcoholism. Great word in AA. Yeah, but. Grateful to those people is a very weak way to say one is still alive that was in that room that night. One still goes besides me to Alcoholics Anonymous 4 or 5 times a week. One still seeks God's help on a daily basis. One still believes what the book says in offering us a solution, that the main problem of the alcoholic centers in the mind and not the body. Don't worry about folks drying you out and feeding you with vitamins and stuffing you with nutrients. You'll just get drunk as hell feeling better. But not since 1935 and its publication in 1939 has all the world's scientists, including those that stuck some folks on the moon and really blowed it the other day, they stuck a woman up there. I'm just thinking about what we're going to do when them moon folks start sending theirs to us. Nowhere in medical, religion, research, or psychiatry has anyone yet come up with the description of the disease and the treatment for it contained in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. No one has been able to touch it. No medical doctor has been able to improve on Silkworth's doctor's opinion in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. No one. We, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we are not treating alcoholism medically. We are treating it by the awareness and acceptance of, through a program of mental and spiritual growth, according to our book, and I believe every word of it, even both covers. And I don't believe nothing else about a drunk. And I don't need to, because all this drunk had was the experience, strength, and hope of drunk drunks who were now sober drunks, and who handed me a book and says, do what it says. And in there is a line that says it will solve all your problems. People are proving it. They've got Emotions Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous, Fatties Anonymous. Anonymous. People don't copy a failure. People don't reach in and pluck out a failing program. The bottom line is, if it ain't working, you can't make no money out of it. That's the bottom line. And it was not our purpose nor intention to treat anyone for alcoholism. It was our purpose to share our experience, strength, and hope so that other alcoholics could recover. I believe that with all my heart. I believe that the only reason on earth that I stand here tonight is somewhere, someplace, is a sick alcoholic who needs to know, by the grace of God through a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, he too can go all day without a drink of booze. I believe that is my purpose. And my co-founder said to me, do not engage in multifaceted activities lest it divert you, an alcoholic, from your primary purpose. I believe that with all my heart. And I believe you and I are here tonight, those of us who are alcoholics, through the unmerited love of the God of yours and my understanding, and for no other reason or purpose. I believe that with all of my heart. You and I are so fortunate as alcoholics to have a sober day. Not many alcoholics, regardless of what you read or hear, ever get sober. We are the most fortunate minority on the face of this earth. And I thank you, as members of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I've had another day. I never begin or end the day of my life, and pray I never shall, without thanking God and you for AA and for all of you. It's because of AA and you that I've had another sober day. And I have never lost my enthusiasm for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't miss wetting in my pants. I don't miss being in jail. I don't miss attending sanity hearings where I'm sitting in one chair and everybody else is gathered over there. I don't miss wearing, and George talked about them last night, them little canvas overcoats. I don't miss them. You know, I haven't had in over 23 years, I haven't had to go to a sanity hearing. I haven't been in jail. I haven't had on one of them little overcoats. I'd love to tell you I haven't wet my britches. And I don't know anything about alcoholism other than I got a most stubborn case of it. I got it, you know. I don't know nothing about fleas, but I can tell when I got one. But I know about a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, people are forever involving us in deep-seated, intellectual conversations about the disease of alcoholism. And I just die laughing when I think, God, if that fella had met me on a bar, and after about the third time I'd puked in his watch pocket, he'd be going on down the road. He wouldn't know, won't know what was the matter. And I don't know what we do here. We just do it all the time. Like a joke tell out in our country about a couple of cowboys out rounding up some calves and looking for them, and it's hot, the wind's blowing, and it's dusty in the summertime, and they rode up to this windmill to get them a drink of water, and there's a bunch of fresh calf droppings around. The old boy got down off his horse, and he reached his hand down in there and got him, rubbed it across his lips, and the other cowboy looked at him and said, "Good God Almighty," he said, "is that good for chapped lips?" He said, "The hell I don't know, but it sure keeps me from licking them." And that's the way I am about the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It sure keeps me from drinking. Now maybe it don't. I'm hearing today all kinds of new cures that if you do this, you won't end up an alky. And if you do that, you'll get over being an alky. And I hope that works. We're short a few members in areas. And I know nothing finer on earth than an alcoholic believing that he can drink quick to increase our membership. There's no 12-stepper known to man that'll roll you through the front door of a little old meeting than a bottle of that numbskull. It'll bring you. Now them sniffers and stuffers and stickers are having to stay out there a little longer. But that flit will bring you. It'll bring you. You just keep a honking on them long neck bottles and we'll have a spare seat for you. Because we, you know, nothing exhilarates a group like a brand new drunk. And us that like to think we've been around since the beginning, sit back over in the corner and watch that new member with 17, 18 years go and try to heal that drunk. We know it's just a matter of time till he comes to us. The greatest thing on earth is the sharing of our experience, strength, and soul. I wish my teeth hadn't shifted, I'd have said hope. I was talking here a while back and I was fixing it. Got so excited I was fixing to put that old Robert's tum in my lower denture, flew right out. I get excited about Alcoholics Anonymous. I get excited about a no-stumbling, babbling, tongue-chewing idiot like me that ain't had a drink of whiskey for over 23 years. When old Lazarus come out of that tomb, that was a second-rate miracle compared to this guy. Not drinking. I get excited about it. I always wanted to be something. And now I am. I'm an alcoholic. And by God, you can't be one just cause you want to. And I ain't a has-been. I'm a was. And alcoholism is ism. It ain't a wasm. There ain't no alcohol wasm. I've treated a few of those folks. Treatment being, come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I always wanted to be something of my very own. And I am. Through the grace of God and the miracle of sobriety, whatever it is, I am today an alcoholic. I'm kind of like a story of the drunks is out home there in front of one of them bars just raising hell and shooting, kind of like George is talking about, and an old farmer rode up on a mule. And he got out off his mule. One of these cowboys said, Farmer, you ever dance? And they started shooting at his feet, and this old farmer was a dancing. And he was counting them shots. And when that pistol snapped on empty, he reached over across that damn mule and got that old 30-30, and he jacked that cartridge in that chamber, and he said, Cowboy, did you ever kiss a mule? And he said, no, but I've always wanted to. And I've always wanted to be. I'm so appreciative of being here and seeing some of my friends and being with some of my friends. There's an old gal sitting here tonight that has known me since the day I came. She's down from down Shreveport, Louisiana, and her husband was a legend in 12-step work in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was the blessed recipient of many hours in their home listening to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thank God for those people, as I thank them for all of you. And I hope that you and I remember in Alcoholics Anonymous that it remains forever Alcoholics Anonymous. That the door stays open and the pot stays on. And welcome the weirdos and the dingies and the bent fenders. Bring them on in. When they leave, they'll take some like them with them. Don't worry about it. AA is alive and well and doing good, and let it never be divided from the inside. Folks on the outside can't hurt it. On the inside is where you and I need to be kept. As Doc says, guard the erring member, the tongue. If there's any group of people on the face of this earth that ought to be dedicated to being kind to one another, it's the members of Alcoholics Anonymous. ain't nobody else can. I love and I love being sober. And I feel right now, you know, I'd like to sing a few stanzas of Just As I Am. But believe me when I tell you, don't knock being sober if you ain't tried. Don't worry about the steps. Do them. Don't worry about the meetings. Go. Don't worry about the drunks. Talk to them. And as the 12th chapter of our book says, you'll come to know the meaning of love thy neighbor. You'll come to understand that God loves you. And your only expression to love to Him is to live in a way that is pleasing to the God of your understanding, based on the principles of this program. And the only example I need ever be is as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all I ever want to be. I want to be an example of sobriety in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not of intellect or knowledge or scientific approaches. Just what happens to you when you can't drink and you can't keep from drinking. And you go to a place called Alcoholics Anonymous, and you learn to say a couple of three little prayers, and you become concerned about your neighbor, and you go to your meeting on a day, on a weekly or nightly or whatever you go basis, not for somebody to see you or talk to you, but for you to attempt to give back just a little bit of what so freely has been given to me. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love being sober. Thank you.